Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 309 featuring David Schaefer and Dimitri Lazarin, co-founders of Moonlicht Studios in Germany. A lot of fun to do these podcasts now, using this new video method, because I can do from long distances and visit their studio remotely in some ways, which was a lot of fun. Really cool guys. Tell us what you thought about the guys from Moonlicht.
Yeah, they were awesome. And one thing I loved was how they came up with the name for their country or company. You'll have to listen because it's super cute. And they're so young. They're like, they started around in 2019. They've all been around in the industry for a while, but being a young company, they have like so many amazing projects, like CG advertising projects to Netflix series. So it was just a great podcast, and you guys discussed a lot of different topics, which I'm sure everyone that listens to this will be very interested in, because I was interested, and people who know really deal with this stuff will love it. So
yeah. We were geeking out quite a bit. Yes. Like you said, they do a lot of advertising and they do a lot of big stills, including huge billboards and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So we got into a huge DPI conversation, believe it or not, and about AI upscaling and all those types of things. So if you guys are interested in big images and things of that nature, it was really a lot of fun talking to them. They're really great. And, you know, they talked about, touch up stuff, and it's really just interesting. And they seem to be pretty successful. So that's great for them. And they've got a lot of cool projects that they're doing. So a lot of fun talking to David and Dimitri. So cool. All right. We've got a couple of announcements, Kristen. What's going on in the event side of things?
Yeah. So chaosgroup.com/events, you can find this all out. But right now we just have one free webinar right now, which is V-Ray 5 for Rhino, which will be January 12th, the day after this podcast comes out. So you should
perfect.
Check
so,
it out.
So yeah, you should check it out. It's right after this podcast comes out. So you guys should do that. And again, all of our events are at chaosgroup.com/events, and it's V-Ray 5 for Rhino. So find out what's new in V-Ray 5 for Rhino. And we also have several product announcements. What's going on, Kristen?
Yeah, so these are at chaosgroup.com. One, Vantage is out. And we also have a competition of building Utopia that goes along with it.
Right. Perfect. So Vantage, as you guys may know, is our new standalone product that we put out. It used to be called Project Lavina, and now it is an actual product. We call it Vantage, and it's our first standalone product, and it is a real-time ray tracer, fully ray traced and real-time. And it's really cool, and there's a lot of fun stuff that you can do in it. In order to take advantage of it, we kicked off a competition called the Building Utopia Competition, as Kristen just mentioned. And we partnered with our friends at Lenovo and NVIDIA and Kitbash 3D and CG Architect to give you this competition. And it's a great opportunity for you to check out Vantage, which is currently free. And you should be able to just download it and try it out. You can use use Vantage and see what are all the things that's capable of doing. And of course, if you do something really cool for the competition, you can submit it and win some cool prizes. So again, check it out, buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. That's where you would check out all the things you need to do the competition and or you submit your entry. We got a couple more announcements. What's going on?
Yes, V-Ray 5 for SketchUp is out, and C4D, and then V-Ray Benchmark as well.
Perfect. V-Ray 5, of course, was rolling out for all of the new products. V-Ray 5 for SketchUp has been out for a little bit. It includes Vision, which is really cool. You should check it out. Vision is another real-time rasterizer that we've integrated inside of SketchUp that is much closer to what you're seeing in your CG renders, in your ray trace renders from V-Ray. So it's actually pretty cool. So we want you guys to check out Vision as part of V-Ray 5 for SketchUp. And then, of course, our benchmark has been updated with V-Ray 5 as well. So it now includes three different tests that you can do, benchmarks you can do. You can do CPU tests, your CUDA test, as well as your RTX test. And it's been very popular, and you can see how much how fast your hardware is. So if you got new hardware over the holidays, this would be a perfect product for you to check it out. It does really well on new hardware, let me tell you that. Perfect. That's about it for our products, I believe. So if people want to know more about the podcast, where can they go?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Great. And if you guys have any questions or ideas about the podcast, we are always welcome to give us. 2021 is kicking off, and we are always fresh with ideas. So if you want to be on or you have some ideas of people that would like to be on, we're always looking for some great high-profile guests to be on. Those are always welcome. just let us know. labs@chaosgroup.com is the best way to email us. Again, that's labs@chaosgroup.com. Of course, as you guys know, these are in video format. Those are available on our Facebook page, as Kristen mentioned earlier, as well as Chaos Group TV on YouTube. All of our podcasts are up there in video form as well. Cool. That being said, please enjoy this amazing podcast with David and Dimitri from Moonlich Studio.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Make sure things are quiet on my phone side. Yeah, we should be good. All right, let's see. Already, yeah, we're kind of recording, and it's off to the races, as they say. So, okay, this is great. I really am excited about having you guys on. And, it's really kind of fun now that I can do more podcasts over long distances. I used to do them always in person, which is a shame because we can't meet each other, but at least we can do this, which is pretty fun. I'd love to know, first of all, why don't you guys tell me a little bit about your studio and what it's about and how it got started. And then I'm going to go into the past after that and dive into your past. But what? Tell me a little bit about your studio and what it's all about.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having us. Very excited to be here, the both of us. Our studio, Mondlicht Studios, it's German pronunciation because the background story is we are people from Germany, people from Russia, and we wanted a cool name, and we took a lot of time to find a very nice name, and cool names are always taken already, as it usually is the case. Yeah. So we had a big list and lots of names, and after all, we just need to add the names of our wives together, say it in Russian and translate it to German, and that's Mondlicht, Luna, Sveta. So we have the name for the studio derived from that, and we just knew each other, the three of us, Dima, Max, and me. We founded the studio in 2019, beginning of 2019.
This is a new studio.
Yes, yes, we worked together for a longer period before that, but then at some point we thought it definitely makes sense to make it bigger and to expand our network to be more available to our clients as well. So not this usually teamwork together, but do a little more, and so far it's working great. And we just started the business going into advertising with a lot of automotive history from our past and some different expertises, which joined together really well. And we have a marketing department represented who also initiated us being able to talk to you today. We're making good way. And especially in these times, we're super grateful because a lot of businesses are having big trouble, and CGI and remote and remote streams, podcasts, video, blogs, everything is working really great these days. So as awful as it sounds, we have a big advantage from it.
That's true. That's true. So what kind of work did you guys do you guys do, and what kind of the projects are you guys involved with, and you know, what got you guys together as a group?
Dima, do you want to answer? I don't want to talk all the time.
Okay. So our personal background is a bit bigger than background of our studio, because as David said, we founded this just like bit less than 2 years ago, but each of us, I mean the CEOs and also our employees, we have much bigger experience. I started in 2007-8, like more than 10 years ago, and I started as a CGI generalist and post-production, and I worked in mostly within advertising industry. So I had short period and some tests in movie industry as a matte painter, And I tried game dev. I've never tried. I don't know why. It just didn't happen to me. So, but advertising, I really love it because I think that exact direction, it includes all the other stuff. So you can work with animation, you can work with stills, you can even work on some small games, for especially nowadays, using Unreal Engine and so on. So I think that direction includes everything. So, and it gave me a chance to try different, different steps as a 2D artist, as a 3D artist. So, and yeah, and then I started to work in 2011. I relocated to Brazil, and I think I can say that I raised there as an artist with their art directors, and probably this is why I really like, you know, colorful and bright animations. You know, when you say like Brazilian style, everyone have a picture. So I have different versions why it happens, but it happened.
Yes, I would say the Brazilian style is probably different from Norwegian style.
Definitely. Maybe climate, I don't know. So, but yeah. Definitely had a specific unique style. So, and then I moved back to European part, and I worked for some short contract periods, and then also I decided that I wanted to travel. At one period, everyone wants to travel. So, and I just started to take some short contracts for 3, 6 months, maybe 1 year. And I used to work in different places. And last of one was in Sydney. I spent there 1 year and I came back. And yeah, that was a period when I realized like, okay, yeah, now I have kind of nice network and nice experience, but I wanted more. And for that more, I need a team around. And I just met David and Max, and we worked already for some period, and it was very comfortable for us. And at one moment we realized like together we can organize much more than each of us as a like a high level artists individually. So, and David also has a like interesting story at the background, because he used to work in Mercedes, because like my background is definitely freelancer, and I can like, and I also consider freelancer, because when you come for 3-6 months in the studio and then you left, it's kind of also not the same like a full-time employee. And David has completely another background, because he used to work for many years in one big brand. And like, David, please.
Yeah. You work for Mercedes, he said?
Yeah, I got the chance in 2004. And when Dima was talking all with traveling, I was thinking like, okay, what I'm going to say. So I'm just going to say I was at one place the whole time.
Yeah.
Beginning of my professional career, I started CGI in late 90s with early experiments just at home at the home computer and having some friends, or one particular friend doing the same thing. And in 2004, there was just an opportunity. Someone knew someone who's doing CGI at Mercedes, and we got in touch. I got an internship, and from that, I stayed around 11 years in the same place. And I had the same as Dima. You have people on your way who teach you things. You look at them, how they work, how they communicate, how they act in their professional career, and you take away what you need and what you like. And this really shaped my perception of myself, of my career. And looking back, I'm super grateful to have this chance. Not many people have, working in a big company like this, in this environment, and doing CGI. And what we did was, not me alone, but other people, we built a team together for data preparation and CGI visualization inside the company. So just a small team, not like super big, but I think today most of the automotive companies have this small visualization department at least.
That was my
career, and working with engineers, working with people from retail, people from sales, people from development, all over the place. And this was super interesting for me, and I could learn a lot from that, how to communicate with clients, for example, on a different level, on a technical level, creatively, all of that. So at first you need to find out that that this is happening, that not everybody is speaking the same language as you do in your everyday job. So I had this vast automotive background, including also how to handle data and all, some basic knowledge about the CAD processes there, which is super interesting. And following all the development of CGI over the past years, I notice how much knowledge I can transfer from that time still up to today.
Yeah. I worked in, I did several commercial, the car commercials. I was, that was one of my specialties, was car commercials. So nice. I know a lot about the car industry and how that works. And it's a challenge. Car photography is extremely hard. And there's a lot of unknown standards, shall we say, that you have to do, you know, like the way a wheel looks, the way that you have to get that reflection, the reflection right on the bone of the car. There's that, that exact crease where you're supposed to get that reflection edge. And all of those things are a real challenge. And dealing with CAD data is, can be a real problem. And I had dealt with CAD data before there were 64-bit operating systems. So we only had 2 gigs of RAM.
That was That's like, okay, cool. Let's try to open and go home.
Yeah,
today everything became so easy. You open the software, you have presets, you drop something in from some library, but like, back in the days when I started, which is way past your back in the days, I was always thinking like, okay, there were people before me, and like looking at like the first real Pixar movie, like the computer they did this with is, it's just amazingly impressive looking back. And going back to matte painting and movie industry and all, so we're all building upon something from our past.
Yeah, when I did Day After Tomorrow, we only had 2 terabytes of storage.
Yeah, that's not enough today.
No, 2 terabytes for the whole movie.
For the whole movie? No way.
Okay. Yeah. No, we just uploaded an animation.
I have 2 terabytes on this laptop now.
Yeah.
And it's a, it's probably a little stick about this big on here, you know. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. So, okay. So where did you guys work together? Did you guys work together at a place and then decided to start your company on your own? Is that, or you just knew each other?
We knew each other and, we live, close by. So, it's not really a problem to see each other if we want to.
Right.
But there are also people abroad internationally who work with us. And, since we only really got big, kind of end of the last year, there is a an office set up here, which I, where I'm sitting in. Let me just rotate this camera. A few monitors. Here's one. There's one. There's another computer. So everything is set up, but everything is empty.
It's definitely good at cold period because David can save some money for heating. Because
when we render, that saves money. Yeah. But no, we didn't work together. We most of the jobs we did remotely. Already before we started our studio, and right now most of the jobs are also going remotely. We have some jobs which are like super extremely confidential where we have other standards and don't send around any data, but for the most part it's remote and it's absolutely not a problem. Also, we involve a lot of freelancers in our processes sometimes depending on the project, and I really appreciate everybody staying home, staying safe, and if you don't need to go one place, this saves you a lot of time for traveling. So I'm a big fan of home office for everyone where it's possible. It really went this well, even remotely for us. That it was enough.
Well, it's got to be advantageous for you guys because you guys started a studio, right? You started with that in mind. And so it wasn't really that big a leap. You know, you don't have 10 years of an office and equipment and everything else that's been sitting there that you are, have established. You guys already kind of started your studio with that in mind. So it wasn't that big a leap for you guys to make that transition, right?
No, absolutely not. Another just lucky coincidence from this development.
Yeah,
I would say that we started to work remotely before it was a standard.
Right. Now, how many people generally? I mean, obviously, you said you have freelancers here and there. So, what's your general size of your company?
For full time, we have a bit less than 10. Yeah,
okay.
It's like 8, 9, something like that. So, and time by time, we have a we depending on the task, we have some freelancers. And for example, we don't need a Houdini artist for full time because he's extremely expensive and good, but mm-hmm. we have a good relationship. And we, if we have a project for him, we just book him for the project and work directly because we have all the NDA. And the same with concept artists, some, you know, some unique directions what we can't let to keep for the full time in the small team.
Right. Right. But that's okay. That's very interesting. But you guys focusing mainly on commercial work, is that what you're doing most of the time?
If commercial work means paid jobs, yes, for sure.
like commercials, like commercials.
Advertising commercials.
Advertising, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, actually we do. It's about staging a product or a service might be a little bit harder to visualize. So the idea that's firsthand is if you have a product, you want to stage it or this class. You also know this from car visualization and photography. The car can't be there, but the photographer can be put the car in there in CGI. That's like very, very, a very common job for us. Luckily, update older car images, everything used in commercial advertising. Yes.
Right.
Dima, you can also tell a bit about your beautiful Amazon Netflix things because like everybody mm-hmm. knows it and it's honestly super cool.
Please.
Yes. Some period ago, it's a quite a long story, but yeah, I have a friend and they at one moment they relocated to US and they started to work in a company who produced posters for movies and TV shows. And at one moment, they were quite busy. And this is how I started to work as a freelancer, you know, like network. So, I've got a chance to work remotely. And it's still like already 3 years. Already this, my friends, they changed location. Right now, they're already in Apple and the meal. So, but mm-hmm. I still work and this studio is also an agency. They recommend me to another agencies. So, and it's kind of like the long relationship to work with posters for Netflix, for Amazon, for some movies. And I would say it's not like one time. It's mostly like a long relationship with few agencies about the direction. And I like this because it's also it gives me a chance to use all my tools because I'm not only like 3D generalist. I have a big background as a post-production 2D artist. I know how to do even beauty retouching and I can do it and matte paint and 3D and compositing because for me, it's everything kind of like a tools. So, and I just can take these tools, play with them and get the final result, like the image or animation or anything else. So just the final product. So, and yeah, like following back to my background, as I said, I had the chance to being like a one-man army. So I could use like anything. So everything what I needed, I just opened the tutorials, learned and integrated this into my pipeline. So, and I know what exactly I can create faster in 2D, match it with 3D, and so on. It's like, because the main goal for us is always is to get the best result in the shortest time. So, and this is why I can play and trying. That year, it was at the beginning that year we started to work with some animations because before it was just some small, time by time we touched this direction, but also for commercials.
But you guys are doing mostly stills at this point, right?
Before we did mostly stills. So, and still I can say that we just started to work with animations just that January, but we already got some awards because it's kind of like the same pipeline. You need just to, instead of one image, create a sequence of images.
Sure. And man, that sounds easy.
Just make more.
just render more. So for sure, it has some specific. And it also was interesting to learn, and I found out how to animate the cameras. And it kind of like they opened a new door for us, also one more interesting direction. So we really like the animation. We built a department inside. So we have the animators, and because before we kind of have the visualization guys. And also we personally do all these things. We're not like a managing. So we are definitely like a playing
hands,
part
hands
of the team.
Artist.
Exactly. Sure. So we can let still work on the projects and put our fingers inside because we are still just at the beginning. So I really enjoy this period. And also David can tell more because it's kind of like, because we're like free sales and everyone had the one specific interest. And I decided that, okay, let me handle some animations from January. And David and Maxim, they put fingers more into Unreal Engine and VR, AR. And also they did some already like commercials and for Panasonic. And David can tell more about that. And it's like, we just started to add more and more tools around.
Yeah, I don't want to get carried away, but just to sum up, we have this everyday production, still images and some animations, because as he said, we're getting started and we take whatever we can get. And even if it's just a retouching job, we're all in the industry. So it's about making clients happy, making connections, and the more clients and connections we get, the better.
Right, right. And I mean, when you say just a retouching job, I mean, what do you mean? what do you mean by that?
I don't want to downplay it, but like the CGI studios are sometimes about, no, we don't clean up images. It's like below our honor. I don't know what kind of mindset you have for this to say no to some jobs.
Okay.
If there's a client with a problem, we want to help. And if I say just a retouching job, that means there's only retouching to do, not modeling, not concept design, not complicated production, just image in, retouch, post-production grading, image out is also something we do. So we're not really focused on doing something, but we're, what Dima said, we're trying to expand our business in different directions and see how it goes. And VR AR is becoming much more popular with Corona and everything being virtual today.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now it's, So because of that, I mean, because obviously you guys do a lot of these great stills and this great work.
Thank you.
Do you have, do you guys have experience in photography? Is that something that's been part of your arsenal or your knowledge that you've developed over time as well?
Definitely.
Definitely for me also, because I had an experience to work. I started like in Brazil, and in Brazilian, it was a Platinum FMD and one of the oldest, I think, studio. They are like more than 30 years or something like that. And it was based, founded by photographer and one post-production retoucher. And lots of other studios right now in Brazil, like Light Farm and like many others, they founded from the people who raised all together in Platinum. It was like a mother company. So, and then people started to go out and organize and founded their own company. So, and yes, photographers is kind of always should be in-house and the studio, because for the still images, it helped a lot, even for creative retouching, because it's much faster and better than using some different stocks like Shutterstock or any others, because especially if we talk about people, because when you need to use some people, you have some license agreement, and it becomes more complicated than just found someone, take a clothes, take a picture, retouch, and job is done. So,
right.
Yes, and also I had a, this is that was a period when I had an experience to help on photo shooting. Even it was the first car photo shooting that was actually my first project there was for Mitsubishi Outlander, as far as I remember. Yeah, it was like a red Mitsubishi. So, and yeah, it was my like my first period when I had a chance to see how automotive photographers works in real life. And definitely it helped a lot later to bring this into CGI, because this is what we're actually trying to do. We're trying to simulate the real life in CGI. Right. And, you know, okay, as you said before about different lighting and reflections, you know, okay, I should put this here. Oh, yeah, I need some reflector. Okay, plane here, right, just more reflecting. And you're playing with this, and also with light source. When you use a light source, it's not just a default light source. You usually we try to put any texture there, and even with some wrinkles, because it simulates the, again, we're trying to simulate the real photo photo shooting.
Yep. Yeah, you don't want to do a reflection of a car with just a plain white thing. You want to have some texture in that light.
Texture, gradient, anything. Because it's very difficult to get in real life just the perfect rectangle.
Yeah. Actually, I remember when we were doing things like that, we actually rented a huge amount of different lights and area lights and Fisher lights, et cetera, and took photographs and HDRs of all those light sources and then had a whole library. You know, like if you have a huge Fisher light, I don't know, some people may not know what a Fisher light is, but it's a... Imagine an aerial light that's like twice the size of a car, you know, and that's you put it on top, and that's basically what you use to light a car. And that if you have a texture on there, because you no matter how much you stretch it, it's still going to have some wrinkles, a little differences, and definitely some gradients and hot spots, etc. And all of that shows up in a reflection, and it's very subtle. And if you just did one big square, it's not gonna be real.
Since we're talking about photography and automotive, especially me, I worked a lot with photographers in automotive industry, like the photographers for Mercedes-Benz at the time. And it was beautiful to work with those people and even be part of a shoot or talk with them. At a very early stage, I sat down with a photographer in front of a computer and did some rendering, like, okay, let's move the light from here to there. And he was like going crazy. I need like 10 minutes to do this, and now you can I will lose my job. And this discussion we had a lot, and still it sometimes comes up, but I think now it's a little bit settled and everything came together and photographers know what they can do. And a big thing photographers have is expertise. They have 20, 30 years of expertise in lighting that thing that you are trying to light in CGI, and not because you watched some tutorials. You can make up with that experience, and this is absolutely invaluable. And they can also tell you these tricks we were just talking about. Take a black reflector here, white one there, and everything looks beautiful. And I've seen, I don't know if you know Maybach or Maybach. A lot of people say this is a very luxurious brand of Mercedes-Benz. And they were doing an interior shooting, and we got the material, and I was seeing this for the first time in detail. And they used 26 different light sets just for one interior shot to get every trim part right, and every and the door and the seat and everything. So, okay, that's how it's done. And then you can take this away into CGI. If you sit there for hours trying to get this one shot right, make it in three, retouch it together, and that's the same what the photographer does. No photographers... only if you are able to really get this one light set for one shot, that rarely happens.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of different ways to do photography and also CGI, right? And there's, my friend Daniel, he did this. We did this thing where we were doing a shoot of a car, a photograph of a car. We were experimenting. We did car commercials, and we also we're experimenting with photography to teach us about the car commercial, right? And so we did one. It was in a garage, and we had the camera was on a tripod, and then we used a strobe, and we took 50-60 different photographs, and then we added them all together and balanced it out later. And it's the same thing. I mean, you can do that in CG as well. You know, you just have to think about what it is. It's like getting all these different directions of lights. And there's so many different ways to attack a photograph that is interesting. And what's also interesting is, you know, when you think, oh yeah, you're starting to do some some more animations, but doing a still is actually quite involved because you have to tell a lot of stories in that one image, and you have to be able to incorporate quite a bit. I mean, what are your feelings about that?
If I may first, Dima.
Yeah,
feel free.
Yeah, and it's not only about the story in a still image. It's also you need more details because the still image is just stuck. And if you stop some animations at just some random point, even the best movies, you will see like, oh, this is not a great composition. It doesn't look so super good. But in motion, everything comes together, and with sound and everything. So animation might be, I wouldn't say easier, but it's easier to convince people with animations because something is moving and something is just more for your perception. With a still image, it's really like the freeze frame in time, and you start to look at details that you wouldn't look at in an animation at all, especially again in cars, because it's just a beautiful example. The wheels and the car plane and the interior and some light and edges and everything and the details. And if it's a metallic car paint, how are the flakes looking? And in an animation, you buy it. And in the still image, you need to take a lot of care for that. So that's my most concern about the difference between animation and still image production. And about the story, sometimes we have images where there's the story just built upon the background, the setting, and the lighting situation. You start to get a feel for the image, like it's warm and inviting, or it's dramatic and dark and with a lot of volume, light, and fog, and something like this. Sometimes the story only comes from there, but sometimes there's more to the story. And I really love these small stories in images.
Yeah.
Something in the background, like super hidden details. Not this little Easter egg character in still images. It can be super nice. And if it's just some light shedding from a window onto an open road somewhere in the distance, you get a feeling that someone is living there.
Right.
Far away from my place right now. And this gives them the image immediately a totally different meaning if this wasn't there. If there's no warm light and no place you would go to. If you look at the image, you would decide this is where I would go. And if it's not there, it just feels completely different. So, a lot about details. And
I want to add that with still images, there is one more big difference is resolution. Because, for example, yeah. One of the projects also what was made for the Netflix it's called Altamar, but also in other countries, it's Seven Seas or something
High Seas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I'm really happy because like last year it got the silver at Clio Entertainment, and I was super happy. So the agency just submitted this to award. And that year, nice. Also just a few weeks ago, it also still keeping the awards. And it wasn't only just a poster. Also, it was a big print what was covered in Madrid, the entire building, like a ship, like a huge ship was on the building.
70-80 meters tall print wrapped around
the building. Yeah, like four floors building, and it like almost covered. And it was quite tricky to render because... it's like you have one ship and you need to render it from different angles, then match them together. And because in the case when it will cover the building, it will look like a ship.
Because
it's like a ship. It's like a front part and then the side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And it was quite tricky and interesting. And that resolution. So, and you already start to think not only about like, 2K or 4K, no, it's like 70K, and you need to think how to wrap a building.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. And also not so far, like a few months ago, we used to work with a big project for one US startup, car startup. They needed one of the image to cover their store, and it was like a big wall. David, was it like 40K or something?
No, it was something between 75 and 90K in the end, upscaled, retouched, and everything.
Yeah, and it was wow. like a group of cars. So it's like
but that's totally, can... totally insane. Really, that yeah. doesn't happen so often. These it's just really just to tell the cool stories about the huge images. Because if we talk about 14, 15K production, that happens if you get photos from a photographer using phase one. And you mm-hmm. even might stitch the images together and you get beautiful image quality and you want to render in there. It's great. But mm-hmm. when I started CGI, like 2K images, that's cool. And then someone came, I need 5K, 300 DPI for print. And 5K, that's big. And today 10K is kind of the standard. So it's raising 10K the bar kind of all the time.
Right.
And 15K is like, oh, okay, that's a lot. And 20K, people start to say, if I save that Photoshop file, it would take at least half an hour and so much disk space, blah, blah, blah. But these 50, 70K, that's rare. And if we deliver that, we work in it in Photoshop, which is kind of funny, and then always flat it down to one layer and just save this. But it's absolutely crazy. And again, it doesn't happen so often.
Yeah, but that's kind of crazy to deal with that. I mean, is it just... Do you think it's necessary or do you think it's not necessary?
I think it's definite. So we're doing the job. I would be stupid to say it's not necessary. But for this print around the house from Dimas Visual, you need some quality for that. And if you go to 50K and print it with like 70 dots per inch, it will look good on the building. If you need it for a storefront, it's not 80 meters tall. But you are right there in front of it. So for that, you might want to have at least maybe 200 DPI, something like this. So if you want to cover a big space, you just need it. And you really can see the difference between upscaled and rendered and how big you rendered, how much you upscaled. So sure. We're always a little bit not frightened, but we know that it's hard to handle this resolution. And if the client is requesting 70, 80K, we tell him, okay, this is a much different production than just the usual production. Sometimes you need to split the cameras into different areas, render that, put it together. So it can be really crazy and it depends on the client. Usually we recommend produce a little bit smaller and accept a lower DPI. And nobody will need 300 DPI in 80 meters. This is just, I think, still today kind of impossible.
That's the problem. Is some people always, they always say 300 DPI, right? They say 300
as
DPI, but they don't, as a reflex, but they have no idea what they're talking about when they say that. It's like, it especially has to be 300.
It's the standard.
Especially they need something like we need 5,000 pixels and 300 DPI. It doesn't make sense at all. Yeah.
No.
Because you need
and just... 300. It's like 300 DPI. I can give you, I can give you an image that's 300 pixels by 300 pixels, and that's 300 DPI. It's just 1 inch.
It's 1 inch. Exactly.
1 inch. Exactly.
So that's the resolution. The size mm-hmm. of the dots, and I don't think that people really understand when they say 300 DPI, right? And it's not, like you said, it's not always necessary. Like my laptop here is 4K that I'm looking at, and that's completely unnecessary. If I gave you,
but it's nice.
I can see. Sure.
Yeah.
Is it?
And that's the point. It's nice.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, if you have a billboard on the side of a building or a big thing. I can do this. It's this, you know, same thing, right? My mm-hmm. eyes can only see so much. I'm not seeing all that resolution. And yes, you know, who was it? The Apple was the one that came up with, what did they call it for their phone? They call it retinal scan or retinal. Yes.
Retina displays. Yes.
Retina display, meaning it's so small that your retina mm-hmm. cannot detect the pixels.
Mm-hmm. It looks good ridiculous. And it sounds awesome. Great marketing.
It sounds, but it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
It's just technology.
It's And so I think that sometimes people like, you know, when they, I remember this is, you know, back in the early or late 90s, someone said, we got to do a billboard. It's got to be 300 DPI. I'm like, do you know how many pixels that is? You know,
yeah,
I mean, 300 DPI and the billboard is 40 feet across. I mean, it's not going to make any sense.
Yeah. And that just happens in productions. They say we need it this big and 300 DPI. And immediately, you know what this would mean. And you ask, are you sure about that? Because
right.
nobody mm-hmm. even thought about that. But
yeah.
I think to everybody who's listening, please get this message out there. There are tables on the internet where you can see resolution, pixel, print size, everything, and understanding that a pixel in DPI equals print size. That's the whole equation you need.
Right. And especially if you look at a, you know, if you look at a billboard and you see someone's picture on the billboard, there's a camera that took that picture. They did. They didn't. The camera didn't take 80,000 pixels.
Yeah, but I 100% agree.
But nowadays it takes almost like 12K. So for if we talk about phase one, it's almost like 12K. And 12K and 12K, it's already like 24K. And now there are different options. But yeah, as David said, usually it's a rare thing when we need something bigger than 20K. So I think like usually it's something between 10 and 20K. 10K is kind of a standard. Yes, right. Because also that prints what I work with, like that. I think I should name the agency Rhubarb Agency because like I'm making with them all these beautiful prints because of this agency. And it's cool. Right. Not so far. It was Utopia, the new TV show at Amazon. So and it was done with V-Ray and like the beautiful carousel with all these details. And at the beginning, it's like it was around like 20K at the end. But as a result, they also combined these billboards and they like kind of like cut it and make this carousel a bit of pop out. You know, nowadays, it's not just a flat billboard. Nowadays, it's more and more coming like, a piece of art, you know, because they try to build construction or Amazon and Jack Ryan. They put a helicopter, like full one by one size and instead of billboard. So, yeah, it's like a bit of like a fake helicopter, but like the real model of helicopter.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're trying to find a solution, everything what takes attention. And I think that's great. It's very great and big fun to be a part of this, I don't know, of creating these exhibitions. I don't know how to call this. Because it's not just an advertising. It's not just a print. But also the interesting direction. Also one of the moment why we... why I was really interested in animations, because more and more often, especially in some undergrounds, we can see that like what few years ago it was a print and nowadays it's a screen. So, and more often people try to put, instead of just a print, one still image with a story, they prefer to put the, like even 5 seconds, but just simple animations. Time by time, they take just the same print, just in layers, do some simple parallax effect, but already... I love it.
We need something for Instagram.
Because it takes more attention. Even why, I think TikTok is more successful than Instagram, because Instagram was about still images and TikTok about animations, because, we like some movie, like our eyes, we are, as a like a people, as a person, we like different movements, so it takes more attention. It gives another problem, like a cyberpunk, everything is is moving around you, and it's like a crazy mess. Right. But I think, it really happens that right now we're getting somewhere between a print and animations. It's like they combine together.
And it's getting mixed together,
Mixed together. The same like photographers in CGI. Nowadays, we do every week, we do some Friday streams in our Instagram just to answering, collecting the questions during the week and just answer on that. And it very often question, it was, nowadays it's less and less about, will CGI win against photographers? Like, will photographers will die as a professional? No, it's like it converts to another side. It's combined together because we have lots of very cool collaborations with photographers, because photographer can create very nice backplates with HDRIs, and a CGI artist can integrate the car there, and it will be the fastest and the best result, because for CGI artists, create the full CGI location is much longer. And sometimes it takes more time and details and more artists involved and like longer, more expensive and complicated. And this is, again, when the photographer and CGIs, they combine their best sides together. And it, especially in automotive industries, it gives a chance, it gives a chance to produce a nice, fast and good product.
So, well, it's tough. I mean, I remember there's my when I was working on iRobot, my the supervisor on the show who was great, his name was Eric Nash. He was also a DP, and he wanted to learn about, and this is before ray tracing, just keep that in mind. But this is in RenderMan, and he was wanted to know how I light a shot, because he wanted to learn more about the CG, because he comes from the practical. He used to do miniatures and stuff like that. And so he's looking at it, and I'm showing him, you know, and then you hit render, and then you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and then you hit render, and you move the light a little bit, you wait. And he goes, that would be like, I, as a photographer, would go on set. I would look at everything. I'd turn all my lights off. I'd move them around where I think they should be. Wait a half an hour, turn them on, look, goes, nope, that doesn't work. Turn them off, go back, move them again.
It's
like, it would be horrible. And it's like, no wonder it takes you days to light a shot. It's like,
I still remember 2008 and only one bucket in V-Ray is moving. These days there was no region like selection render,
right?
Region render, and right. I needed just to know what happened like in the bottom left corner, and I tried to play to start this only one bucket, start from the left to another angle just to get this piece and see what's going on there, because no progressive rendering, no region render. And only one bucket, and you sit and wait and look at this bucket.
That was a long time ago. Definitely. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Now, actually, I have a couple of technical questions, because I'm curious. Do you guys have tools? I mean, there used to be tools that you can do specifically for very large stills that allows you to split your rendering into multiple regions, and then you can combine them together later. Do you guys have tools like that so you can split your job to multiple computers?
Yeah, but it's just scripts inside the software. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's just scripts.
Like Cinema
and
or something like that. So you even get basic scripts on the internet for that.
Right.
I didn't check if Creative Crash or High-End 3D or whatever it was called, where I got a lot of scripts in the past, if it's back online, because it was offline for some time. And we do have very good programmers also in our vicinity, in our network. So it's not a problem to tell them exactly what we need, and we get the tools.
That's
true. Which is a big advantage, and I totally recommend it.
Yeah, but in general, most of the time, any kind of renders can handle 20K, 25K. It's like not a problem. Yeah,
right.
So only some tricks and tips, only if we need some very rare thing like a wrap a building. So yeah, in this case, we need to dance around and find the solution how we need to match them together. But most of the time, nowadays, render can easily press the button, just set, okay, give me 25K resolution, press the render button, and just get it.
Nice. Okay, now I have another question for you, because you mentioned Instagram. On my Instagram feed, constantly, you know, you get these ads, and they think they know who you are and what you want. And I'm getting all these ads for these AI up-resing tools. So I figure, since you guys are dealing with these things, and I'm sure there's a lot of quote-unquote up-resing that you guys do, what do you think about that, about these new AI tools or deep learning tools, and how effective are they in your world?
We just use them. Also, I think you and me, we get the same feed in Instagram with the same advertising. Again, it came up, and I thought, we definitely need to give it a try, because there was this 70K request, and we already had the image produced in 10K. We made a 100%. Super accurate upscale to almost 20K and retouched small edges. A small tip for retouching edges: cut out the edge which gets these nasty steps, put them into Photoshop path blur, just absolutely straight, the same edge, put some noise on there and put it back into the image. Works wonders. That's my personal AI AI upscaling. But those tools, without promoting any names here, definitely give it a try, because for us it worked really well. The only thing there was we got different results. There are a lot of strange settings you can play around, which reminds me of super old subsurface scatter settings of some shaders with strange names, and you just tweak everywhere and see what it does. So with that, it was kind of the same. So getting structure in there, interpret different textures, and we upscaled a car paint, looked beautifully. But he made some like vintage cracks. I have this is my coffee mug, and maybe you can see these crackles here. And it just added some crackles into the car paint, which I don't know why and what algorithm led to this interpretation. So, but everything else was fine and much
better.
Maybe
it was trained on old cars.
Maybe, but it was a pretty new car, so not smart. But anyway, it was again the same thing we had with photography. It was 5-6 different solutions of technical settings and putting them all together. Because in this shot, the light looked better, and the car paint looked better, and the background, and so on. And finally, when you have 100% resolution, do one single blur and one super tiny noise on top of it, and you have a very good image. So I thought, like 1 or 2 years ago, I was always very resilient towards these AI upscale software additions, because I thought, it doesn't really work. But now I've seen convincing examples, and I tried it myself in a very limited process, because it was just one image. We really tried it, or we really gave it a go.
Right.
But I was positively surprised. So my recommendation is try for yourself. And in some ways, you might really get a fast, very good result. And even if it's just 80% of your image and you have to retouch the other 20%, it's a big advantage already.
Yeah, it's interesting though. It's interesting how it works. I mean, it's obviously has to invent data, right? It's not just it has to create things out of nothing. And
that's what blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, it does that based on training. I've actually even seen, here's another weird one that I've seen. I've seen an AI raw photograph. You feed it a JPEG and it gives you a raw file.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen that. That's crazy.
Crazy. Like,
because, but if you think about how that works, right? I mean, this is all GAN-based, right? Which is the AI tool or the deep learning tool, where if you feed it a bunch of JPEGs and you feed it a bunch of raw files, you say, okay, this, that. And then if you keep training it that way, it's pretty easy to train it. You just take a bunch of photographs and JPEGs and you put them together and say, here. And so now he's like, okay, now here's a JPEG. Now what would the RAW look like? And it would make a RAW out of that. And it is kind of interesting to think about what that means. Because, right now, the question of what is a photograph is actually a very interesting question. Because, like I have a Google Pixel. It's known for taking great photography. But it's the sensor is teeny.
Yeah.
And so all these the most of the photography is interpreted in the software. Most of those pixels are not real. And it's kind of a weird idea of what it is that's actually making the picture and the computer power that's involved in that. And I think it's really fascinating. You're funny when you were talking about specifically, it's like, my AI is, to do that specific tool that I want, in terms of getting that edge right. You called it AI, but I'll call it RI, real intelligence.
Yeah.
but I think it's interesting because that is something that I think that we, as artists, we lose a little bit of control over that by by making those choices being derived from the software. I think there's definitely some advantage for software to get you that way. But you, like you said, you didn't even know what the settings meant. You were just playing with it because it doesn't, it doesn't mean anything. But if you know exactly what you want as an artist, you still have a responsibility, right? I know that edge is wrong and I know how I want to fix it. And the AI is not necessarily going to do that. You're just like, I don't know what the AI is going to do, right?
Yeah, I want to share one quick story about what also shaped my perception of CGI and what we are doing. At some point, I realized everything is just a pixel, and a pixel has a value usually from 0 to 255 as we know it,
right.
In the end. So the end product, HDR displays and so on, that's a different story. But there's an image and it has a value, and
you
can pick it, you can paint it and go to the next pixel. So, and everything of this is just an interpretation of something, of reality. And I had the great, great pleasure to enjoy a two-day workshop with, he was technical director or technical lead artist at one Martin Scorsese film, Hugo Cabret, or whatever you pronounce it in. I can just use my German pronunciation. Mm-hmm. So brilliant guy. It was about fusion. And he also told some cool stories from his past. And he wrote an algorithm. If he knows the aperture and the focal length and everything and the lens of the camera, he could unblur an image. And he showed us the image and you didn't see anything on the image. It was really a mess. You could see, it's maybe some part of a room, but not really something. And then he said, I was on the toilet at night and I was thinking and I came up with this idea how to reverse engineer this thing. And he wrote something and put this through and it really worked, and you could start to read what's on the books in the shelf, just reverse engineering that. And I was like mind blown. What pure mathematical formulas can do, and if you use them and train AI to do the same, and an AI can learn so fast and so much, but you still need to have this algorithm in the first place. So when I realized this about pixels and what you can do with a pixel, you can move forward, backward, and just try to meld this theory of the real world and my perception. The best example is a sunrise, and you go out and see it with your own eyes. You take a picture with your phone and think, that looks like crap, because the dynamic just doesn't do it just. So how to get this in an image? You need to make different exposures, paint it together, what you think is correct. So after all, everything is just an interpretation of something, of some value, of some color.
Yeah.
So it's pixels after all.
Yeah.
And when you realize that, you are a big step forward, because you always try to convince yourself with your work. And you know that. You look in Photoshop like 25% downscale of the image. Check it in 100% if you really want to go into detail, because then you see differences. And everything is really,
It's interesting. I mean, I was just... You know, we always used to joke about, 10 years ago, when I was to joke about the movies, it's like, enhance the image. And I was like, like, you can't really do that. But now,
still today, that's so laughable. It's so ridiculous sometimes.
But
enhance.
It's not necessarily untrue. The problem is, it's like the AI is inventing it. Like, so you took a blurry person and now it looks like a bigger person. But is that the same person? Or is it just what you invented in the AI,
It's kind of generated person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a generated person, right? It's not real. It's not, you're not looking at the person and go, that made it right.
But at the same time, this is what exactly the industry needs. For example, for game dev, you need to create the skins for lots of people are working in open world game, for example, and you need to create all these faces, skins, and everything. And you can take the photos from Shutterstock or, take a picture from people from studios. You need some randomly generated talents, peoples. So, and this is what your AI can do. So, for some reasons, this is what exactly we need. Yeah, and as an artist, you can say like, okay, I like this skin, or no, please generate me another one, a new one. So and actually we use, I just realized that at one moment, especially in Photoshop, like we have the content aware fill option for many years already, and we use it, and we just don't think about this like an AI feature, because actually what we do, select the region, press Shift F5, it just fills somewhere, just analyze some pixels around, just fill, remove, reduce anything what you don't need. And you can look at this and say, it was done good for my taste or not good. Just change the selection and redo the same. And it's just, just generate another combination of pixels, what kind of height the object, what you don't need. So yes, and like nowadays it's but it saves time. Yeah, it definitely works well, but yeah, sometimes it works strange for our taste because this is what AI can't replace, the human eye, because human eye, I mean, the same like photographers, like your expertise, your background, your experience. So, you know, like, okay, this is beautiful, this is doesn't. For AI, it's just like a amount of pixels. So you can for the artist, you can tell, please create me the beautiful picture with Apple. If you ask AI create a beautiful picture with Apple, it can analyze beautiful pictures Apple. Try to combine something, but it can be completely ugly. So,
maybe. There's actually you should. There's a Andy. What's his name? Andy Lomas. You should listen to the podcast I did with him. He's wrote a paper about AI trying to make aesthetic decisions, which is very interesting to think about, like preferential treatment. So anyway, this has been, we can go down a rabbit hole of this whole thing, but this is really cool what you guys are doing. I'm very impressed, you know, like Moonlicht, is that how you pronounce it?
Moonlicht.
Yes. Which means moonlight, right?
Yes.
Moonlight.
Pretty simple. Right. And a lot of people actually remember Moonlight. They say, what's it called? Moonlight Studios? Okay, you got the idea.
Yeah. Well, which is great. So it's really cool to talk to you guys and have you guys on. And it'd be great. Thank you so much.